Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
10 long years searching for another championship. Now you've got one. How does that feel? How's number 17? After nearly closing it out in Game 5 on Friday night, the Lakers did the damn thing last night. And you knew they would from the moment the starting lineup was announced. Because that starting lineup included a legend, a unicorn, one of one. It included one Alex Caruso. Hell yes, it did. To quote the old man behind the glass, finally.
Finally.
To quote the same old man behind the glass, game on.
Game on.
If you want to finish, if you want to go home, if you want to close, you put the ultimate finisher and closer in from the jump. And that's exactly what Lakers head coach Frank Vogel did with Caruso. Finally.
Finally.
Game on.
Game on.
Look, I've got nothing but respect for the Miami Heat and the culture. The Heat culture. But even they had to know that that game and that series were over the second they saw Caruso walk onto the floor to start that game. I bet one of them saw that and probably even dropped a JC bomb.
Jesus Christ, it's Jason Bourne.
It's the Caruso.
Jesus Christ, it's Jason Bourne.
Game 5 was amazing, right? Friday night for both teams. But the Lakers were not about to run that back. They were not going to let the Heat stick around one more game. They were not going to allow them to get even stronger and more confident. No way in hell the Lakers were going to mess with a seventh game. Not with these guys. Not with the potential for Jimmy Butler to put them on his back and will them to some sort of miracle. The Lakers were not going to let that happen. The Caruso was not going to allow that. Neither was LeBron, who I will get to in a moment, or Anthony Davis, who was tremendous, and somebody else I'll get to in a moment. And it wasn't just them, right? It was all of them. It was everyone, especially playoff Rondo, who went next level as finals Rondo. Finals Rondo was in the building last night, especially in that first half when he was everywhere and dominating everyone.
They're fast breaking. Rondo for three. Got it.
Wow.
Playoff Rondo has arrived. Rajon Rondo scores 5 straight Laker points.
Leading scorer for the Lakers.
Rondo dribbling into the front court. Rondo crossover, got to the rim, throws it up and in. And Miami calls timeout with the Lakers up by 15.
Lakers radio on that call. Finals Rondo was on a bleeping mission last night. This guy was 6 of 6 from the field for 13 points in the first half alone, and he was attacking the rack at will. Then Caruso started doing Caruso things. In other words, performing acts of magic, because this dude is a freaking wizard, doing things that are inexplicable, doing things that you can't believe that he can do, even though you just saw him do them. You know, things like wrecking Bam Adebayo on box outs and then sprinting the floor and finishing on the other end.
LeBron, bounce pass, Caruso to the rim, lays it up and in. The Lakers are putting a number on the Heat. They now lead by 24. And this is a domination by the Lakers.
They were turning that game into a track meet in a layup line, and then completely locking the Heat up on the other end. And by then it was clear. The Heat had nothing left. They left everything they had on the floor in Game 5. They had emptied the tank completely. Jimmy Butler was amazing in that game. Everybody in Heat gear was. But if you want to win a championship, if you want that ring, you've got to beat this Lakers team, and you have to do it every single night. You have to play like that every single night. And Miami just did not have anything left last night. They were slow to react to everything. 50-50 balls were 90-10 balls for the Lakers. So that was not just about the Lakers taking the fight to them and Miami not responding. Miami just did not have anything left. They were done. There was nothing left in the tank. They didn't have their legs anymore. Butler had 35 on Friday. He had 12 last night. That's part of the difference between Miami and LA. Part of the difference between LeBron and everybody else. LeBron shows up every single night. Every single night. That game was over in the first half. They had a 30-point lead in the second quarter, which is unreal. The Lakers got a 17th ring. LeBron got a fourth. Anthony Davis and Alex Caruso got their first. And J.R. Smith got to take his shirt off. That pretty much sums up the entire night. But last night was about more than that. Much more than that. LeBron summed up what last night was about during the trophy presentation.
I told Jeannie when I came here that I was going to put this franchise back in a position where it belongs. Her late great father did it for so many years, and she just, you know, took it on after that. And for me to be a part of such a historical franchise is it's an unbelievable feeling, not only for myself, but for my teammates, for the organization, for the coaches, for the trainers, everybody that's here. We just want our respect. Rob wants his respect. Coach Vogel wants his respect. Our organization wants their respect. Laker Nation wants their respect. And I want my damn respect, too.
So why don't we talk about that for a minute? Why don't we talk about his damn respect? Let's go back to when LeBron came to the Lakers. They had not been to the postseason in years. They were coming off a 35-win season. And there was all this talk that LeBron was only coming to L.A. to set himself up for retirement. That LeBron was coming to the Lakers, but it was not about winning another ring. It was about setting up his production company for when he stepped away from basketball. That he didn't need another ring. That maybe he didn't even want another ring. That his legacy was already intact after he delivered that championship to the city of Cleveland and went through Golden State to do so. And there was even more. Not only did he allegedly not need or want the additional ring, but there was that rap that nobody who truly mattered wanted anything to do with this guy. Nobody wanted to play with this guy. The rap that he was not a great teammate, that his time had passed, that guys would rather team up with other guys in other places. And then on top of that, of course, there was that pocket of Laker fans who were pissed at LeBron because he was not Kobe. And they were not going to accept him. People were clowning him and looking forward to the aging king showing up in Laker gear like L.A. Ram Joe Namath. Yeah. And then, in his first year with the team, things were going well until he got hurt. And then he suffered the worst injury of his NBA career. And then it got bad, really bad. L.A. fell apart. They missed the playoffs again. Magic quit so he could start tweeting. Luke Walton moved on. The coaching search went on longer than anybody expected. Oh, and by the way, speaking of respect, will you now give Frank Vogel his respect? This guy came into a really challenging spot with a ton of new faces, and immediately just about everybody started the clock on that guy too. Like, all those guys are hired to be fired, but seemingly nobody more so than Vogel, or so the argument went. There were pools on how long it would take for Jason Kidd, who was on that staff, to get that gig. How long was that going to take? What was the over-under on Vogel? 3 months? 30 days? 30 hours? 30 minutes? 30 seconds? Except for one thing. Vogel is a hell of a coach, and he did a hell of a job in quickly getting all of these new faces on the same page. An incredible job of getting them to buy in, especially defensively, and a hell of a job in leading and helping to navigate through a gut-wrenching roller coaster of a season. I mean, remember when the Clippers got Kawhi Leonard and Paul George? Remember when little brother supposedly got over on big brother?
Brother.
And that those guys wanted nothing to do with the Lakers or LeBron. Remember how that proved that LeBron was washed? Yeah, well, where are Kawhi and PG right about now? Where have they been for the past month? More importantly, where the hell were they when it mattered most? Where were they when their team and their organization needed one or both to take over on the big stage? I'll tell you where they were. Nowhere. They disappeared. They vanished. LeBron, though, is where he's been most of his entire career, leading from the front. Leading from the front, putting in the time, and running on some serious rocket fuel.
Personally, thinking I have something to prove fuels me, and it fueled me over these last year and a half since my injury. It fueled me because no matter what I've done in my career up to this point, there's still a little rumblings of doubt or comparing me to you know, the history of the game. And has he done this? Has he done that?
Yeah, he has. Hey, let me ask you something. Did you know that a fire department responds to a fire every 24 seconds? Fact. In October is Fire Prevention Month, and we have teamed up with First Alert, which is the most trusted brand in fire safety, to help you be prepared for the unexpected and to review some key safety tips. As an example, smoke and carbon monoxide alarms can help provide an early warning in the event of a home emergency. So you want to make sure you have enough First Alert smoke and carbon monoxide alarms, and it's one of the best things that you can do for your home and your family. Make sure to install alarms on every single level and in every bedroom of your home. And once they are installed, it's important to make sure that you maintain them by testing them with regularity. Also, remember the alarms do not last forever. They do need to be replaced at least every decade. If you can't remember the last time you replaced your alarm, it is best to just replace that unit completely. And as an option for replacement, my favorite is obviously First Alert's combination smoke and carbon monoxide alarm with a 10-year sealed battery. This alarm provides 2-in-1 protection. For more information on fire safety products, safety tips, and educational activities that you can do at home with your family, make sure to check out firstalert.com/fireprevention month. Once again, go to firstalert.com/fireprevention month. He's done a lot of those things. He's done most of those things. So you better give LeBron his respect. He just put on an absolutely ridiculous regular season, followed by an even more absurd postseason. You know, and that rap about elite players not wanting to play with him? Did you see the dynamic with Anthony Davis? What's good, AD? That was something
AD,
else.
AD, what's good, baby?
And here's my other piece of advice. Enjoy LeBron. Enjoy LeBron. Admire greatness. I know it seems like this guy's ageless and that he can do it forever, but he can't. He won't. I'm not going to get into that whole GOAT argument right now. It's legitimately the most tired, played argument of all time. So just take a moment and enjoy and appreciate this guy's greatness. Appreciate the fact that you get to see it on a nightly basis. Like, you know, great Jimmy Butler has been in the playoffs. LeBron is still on a totally different level from Butler. And Butler's amazing. But LeBron's on a totally different level. And it shows. As Halsey tweeted last night, quote, "It's insane to be alive, witnessing LeBron James in real time. Hate to say it, but glad I was born." End quote. Let me give you one more truth. Here is another truth. Man, don't be putting an asterisk on this either. Not even close. Do not even mention that. That is another piece of whack sports yelling, sports debate show garbage. Man, take that garbage someplace else. Not only was that not an easy ring to win, it may have been the hardest ring to win. The massive hiatus in the season, having to go into the bubble, living in the bubble for 3 months, away from home, away from family, away from friends. Just go ahead and ask the Milwaukee Bucks, the best team in basketball in the regular season, how easy it was to win a ring this year, how easy it was to function in the bubble. The physical challenge of ramping back up again. Go ask the Clippers how that went in terms of staying in shape. Because it sure looked like that was a bunch of guys gassing out in the second round. So go ask the Clippers what that was like. The mental and psychological challenge of being trapped in the same location, unable to leave for a quarter of a year. LeBron and the Lakers handled all of that and more. They're the champs. You better give them their damn respect. All of them. They earned it. He is Darius Butler. Darius, good to have you back. How are you?
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. I'm good. Antoine also said what's up as well.
You tell Antoine I said what's up. It's good to hear from him, too. Listen, you and I, Darius, talked last year when you were starting to make a name for yourself as an analyst. Bring me up to date. How is life for you right now, and how much are you enjoying breaking down all these games?
Life is good, man. I cannot complain. Obviously, there's a lot of crazy things going on, but you know, we spend a lot more time with the family and staying connected to the game. Like you said, break it down the game. And getting great feedback from fans, you know, coaches, players, just because, you know, it's something you don't see often. Just trying to break it down and put it kind of in layman terms, trying to help people understand football. And, you know, like I said, it's helping me stay connected. And I'm still watching film. I'm still watching film like I'm playing almost. But it's been fun.
I like it. Darius Butler is joining us right now. He's the co-host of the Man to Man podcast. So, Darius, what was your reaction when you saw Dak Prescott's injury? And as one athlete and a competitor looking at another, what kind of emotions do you feel when you see a guy go down like that with an injury like that?
Oh, man, it was so tough, man. And you only hear great things, you know, about the guy's character and how he is in the locker room. You see, he's been one of those guys who's been out there every snap since he won the job as a rookie. And so you feel terrible for him. And then on the business side of things, you feel even worse because, you know, as a player, you know when a guy earns his money. And he earned his money, and obviously he was, I would say, underpaid his first 4 years. And then played on the contract, a franchise tag this year. So bet on himself. I feel like he bet on himself last year. But you feel terrible for a guy like that who isn't locked up long term. You know, it's a violent game, and you know, it's a blessing to walk off that field every practice, every game. So I felt horrible for him. You saw the reaction from his teammates, even his former coach, Jason Garrett. You know, I think everybody in the league feels for a guy like that.
Yeah, I thought that was a classy gesture by Jason Garrett to walk over there and check on him. Darius Butler joining us. And listen, you guys know what you sign up for when you play that game. You know the violence involved. You know the business involved. You yourself have made the point that there is no loyalty in that business. Having said all that, should the Cowboys have taken care of a long-term contract for Dak before this year?
Oh, absolutely. I think even before going into last year, he should have been priority number one to lock him up. And they paid a bunch of other guys, you know, Zeke, DeMarcus Lawrence, Jalen Smith, a lot of guys have gotten paid, but I mean, you got to take care of your quarterback because that type of thing resonates throughout the locker room. You know, like I said, he's a guy that's done it. He's earned it from day one. And when you see guys getting taken care of, that's really how you create and build a culture. And, you know, he had to go out there and play on a franchise tag this year. You've seen other guys in his draft class get paid already with huge contracts, Carson Wentz and Jared Goff. And in my opinion, I feel like, you know, he's outplayed both of them guys up until this point. So you really feel bad about him. I think Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones should have definitely paid him his money. He's the face of, you know, the most valuable sports franchise in the world. And, you know, he's giving you everything you wanted on and off the field. Obviously, you know, he hasn't gotten over the hump and won a Super Bowl or anything like that. But, you know, he's done the best he could. And, so I personally think he definitely should have been paid. You know, coming into this year or even going into last year.
You see, this is the kind of analysis you get from Darius Butler. He's joining us once again on the program. Extremely well said by you. Hey, listen, what do you make of Alex Smith taking the field, Darius, after 17 surgeries on his leg?
Yeah, me and AB were just talking about that, man. It's crazy. You know, some guys retire after, you know, one or two big surgeries, and he had 17 on one leg. It's a hats off and a credit to him to even get back out there. I think just getting back out there, he should already be the comeback player of the year. Sitting down watching the games, I'm not going to lie, I was extremely nervous for him. I was kind of terrified, honestly, to watch him play again, especially against, you know, a guy like Aaron Donald and that defensive line and what they were doing up front. So I was definitely scared and nervous for him because the last time I really saw him was when he got cleared, and when he first was medically cleared, and I saw him out in his outside of his house with his family. I'm like, I don't know if that guy looks like he's ready to play football in the game again. But he looked okay, got through a game, and that was a huge stepping stone from him, for him, not only physically but you know, mentally. You know, a lot of it coming off an injury is mental. You know, can I mentally still do this? Can I plant off this foot? Can I take a hit? You know, can I take Aaron Donald for a ride? You know what I mean? So for him to actually get those things done, I think it was huge for him. And, you know, I just hope he stays healthy for the rest of the way.
Darius Butler joining us. All right, when you talk about the mental game, let me ask you this. Like, Dwayne Haskins was benched this week. Mm-hmm. You've talked about the fact that you were benched early in your career. What did that do for you mentally and psychologically? And then how much did that impact your confidence?
It's tough. It's one of those things that as a player, especially at the quarterback position, DBs, you know, you got to have short-term memory. You got to have the utmost confidence in yourself, you know, every play. And to get benched, and as a quarterback, there's only one quarterback that's trotting out there. So as a DB, for me, I was still, you know, coming in and out on different packages depending on the week. But for him, you know, you're not getting any reps throughout the week, especially if you're third string, not getting any reps during the game. So it can be tougher And then everybody's talking about you. You know, you're a quarterback in the NFL, so it can be tougher to stay in, locked in mentally. But, you know, as a player, you have to. You have to find a way. You got to be surrounded by good people, because people can also feed into, hey, man, you should be out there starting. Man, you're better than that guy. You're a first-round pick. You're this, you're that. But you really just have to humble yourself, get back to the drawing board, take advantage of all those mental reps. You know, you're still in the building. You're still getting those reps. And you're a quarterback in the NFL. There's not too many of those guys walking around that can play on this level, your first-round pick. So I believe he'll still have more opportunities in front of him. And now it's really about him just being mentally and physically ready when the next opportunity presents itself. I'm hoping he will. And, you know, because it's going to come. It's going to be a time where his number is called again, whether it's with the football team or another football team. And, you know, I'm pulling for him to hopefully be in the right mental space and physical space to take full advantage of it.
Mike Guest played 9 years in the NFL. He is the creator and host of the Everything DB show. You can find that on YouTube. He is the co-host of the Man to Man podcast. He is Darius Butler. Darius, what did you make of the chemistry between Russell Wilson and DK Metcalf last night and what we've seen so far?
Man, it's amazing. You heard Russ rave about him, you know, talking a lot about the work that they put in together in the offseason. And I was just talking about confidence. You know, confidence is huge in football, and it's huge that you have it in yourself. But at a position like receiver, it's such a dependent receiver. You need that confidence. The quarterback has to have just as much confidence in you. You saw that last night. He went to DK and, you know, I want to say three times in the game, when at least three times. I know when they got in the red area, they went, he got Hughes, knocked the ball out, and then Hughes made another great play on the fade route, and then he went to him again. So just to have that confidence and to continue to build that rapport, he had a great game against the defensive player of the year, Gilmore. So I think, I mean, the sky's the limit for that 1-2 combo. And I wasn't that high on him coming out in the draft, honestly. I know he had all the physical tools. He could run fast, but I thought maybe he'll be a one-trick pony for a while in the league. But his development and his jump from year one to year two has been incredible. And he has to be kind of in that top five wide receiver conversation now. He's looking really, really good.
Darius Butler joining us. That's really high praise for a young player like that. Darius, what do you make of what's going on with the Colts and Phillip Rivers? He's coming off a game where he had a couple of INTs. How did he look to you yesterday against Cleveland? And is there a conversation? Are they going to start thinking about maybe what they do with him? And is it change in the works, or is that an overreaction?
You know, it could look like an overreaction, but if you're watching those guys, I mean, they're built to they should be winning. They should be winning week in and week out. They should be dominating. That defense, that young defense, they got a young defensive core that's playing lights out this year. They just got to take care of the ball. You got to have a quarterback in this league who, you know, you go down a couple scores in the second half, you have to have faith as a team that, hey, this guy can bring us back. He can get us back into position to win this game. And I don't think that faith is there. You know, you saw in a week one with Jacksonville against a team that I felt like they should have beat. He threw two interceptions to a rookie cornerback. And then you see, you know, Redwine came in and off the bench and got a pick thrown right to him. He threw the pick six. So, I mean, that's who Phillip has kind of been in certain spots. But I just feel like, you give a guy $25 million for 1 year, you got to be a part of the reason why we're winning, not a part of the issue. So I think, you know, you still got some money invested in Brissett. I think it's time you give him another shot, because Brissett played well earlier in the year last year. He got banged up. Some pieces around him were banged up as well. And he kind of got thrown under the bus and took a lot of shots that he didn't deserve. So I think you give Brissett another shot and see what he can do with this team. But I don't think Phillip Rivers is helping us out a bunch right now. And it pains me to say it. I thought I had high hopes for him. And he's been efficient in moving the ball. But in this league, when you get down, a lot of these games come down to 2-minute drives. A lot of these games, you saw Russell Wilson do it last night. You see guys do it. Like, we need a guy that can bring us back, make tough throws, and I don't see Phillip Rivers being that guy going forward.
Darius Butler joining us for another moment or so. And then on the other side of the ball, what do you make of Myles Garrett? How did he look to you? And if you're going up against the Browns, man, what do you do about this guy?
I mean, he's a monster. It's a credit that he didn't wreck the game even more yesterday, you know, not having Costanzo in there at left tackle. But, I mean, he's got to be on some MVP ballots. I think I heard someone during the broadcast say that he's been the cause of, like, 8 turnovers already through 5 games, which is, you know, ridiculous when you're talking about a defensive guy coming off the edge like him. Him and Aaron Donald, they just wreak havoc You got to have two guys to account for him. He was on a crazy pace last year before the suspension, but I mean, he gives you so much. He, the way he moves, he's so strong. He has he's not a guy who can just bully you or just speed rush or just, you know, get finesse with you. He can finesse you. He can power you. He can, you know, he's everything you want on a rush guy, and he's showing his value week in and week out. That Browns team. I mean, that's 4-1. Like nobody, I don't think anyone saw them being 4-1. At this point in the season, but you called it?
Dude, I've been calling them America's team now for a couple of years. I love these guys. I am absolutely in love with the Browns. I have been. So, yes, there's a lot of things, Darius, that I get wrong, but not that, man. I was all over that. I hate to be the guy to say, yeah, I told you so, but I told you so. Hell, yes, I'm going to own that. Yes, I did.
Man, they did a great job going out against Andrew Berry. Andrew Berry has done a phenomenal job, even with, you know, you got this pandemic that has kind of screwed this whole offseason up. And even what he did in the draft, what he did in free agency and with that O-line up front. Baker Mayfield is developing with Stefanski at the head coach. I mean, it's looking good all around. It'll be right up in that mix for that division.
Because I'll tell you what, that was a really good NFL Sunday. There are some amazing moments. Amazing moments. Like when Alex Smith made his return for Washington against L.A.
And here we go.
Wow. Folks, Alex Smith, for the first time since November 18th, the 2018, when he had that nasty compound fracture in his right leg, is back out here to play quarterback in the National Football League.
Like, I think to say that it was a nasty compound fracture does not begin to do it justice. He had not played in nearly 2 years. And I say that a nasty compound fracture does not begin to do it justice. If you saw the photos of his leg at any point during that surgery process, you know what I'm talking about. You would have put money on the fact that he would never play ever again. Like, I don't want to be too graphic about it, but it's almost like somebody took a jackhammer to his leg and went to work on it and said, all right, that's what you're left with. I mean, it was terrifying. It was disgusting. I mean, play again. Play in the NFL again. I would have bet any amount of money that guy would never walk again. I would have bet that he would have never had use of that leg again. Because you can't use what you don't have. And looking at those pictures, I don't know how he didn't lose that stick altogether. And not just my words. His words as well. As he told ESPN earlier this year, he spent an extended period of time under heavy sedation, and his memory of what followed still is not clear.
Next thing I remember is waking up several weeks later, faced with the decision of amputation or limb salvage at that point.
That's not a real good set of options, is it? Amputation or limb salvage. Not exactly a good news, bad news thing. Amputation or limb salvage. Notice what was not part of that equation. Putting on the pads, running around an NFL field, making plays, taking shots. But that's exactly what this guy was doing yesterday. And it was an amazing thing to see. Truly amazing and truly inspiring and pretty scary. Even Darius Butler, who came on hour number one, said that he was watching that game and he was really afraid for Alex Smith. Of course, you got Aaron Donald lined up on the other side. So that was an amazing moment. As great as that moment was, Dak Prescott's injury was that bad. And it was so bad that it gets its own take. It was so bad that it gets its own take. And when you deal with the highest Smith's return and the lower Prescott's injury on the very same day, I mean, we're talking about a lot of drama. Maybe too much drama. Speaking of too much drama, how about the Houston Texans winning their first game of the year and their first game without Bob, or as Slarome likes to refer to him, Boob? How about Jacksonville doing everything they could to help in that process? Jacksonville doing everything they could to help out in that process, and especially on this play call on 4th-and-1 from the Houston 8-yard line.
Minshew runs out to the left. Robinson takes the snap. Robinson lost the football. What is that on 4th-and-1?
He was going to throw it. He was going to be the quarterback.
That is an absolute head scratcher.
Hey, Duval, what are you doing? Seriously, what was worse? the call or the execution down there. Tie for last. But credit to Houston, I guess, for getting a win with their interim coach.
Credit.
And now Atlanta will get the chance to do the very same thing because they fired their head coach, Dan Quinn, and their GM, Thomas Dimitroff, after yesterday's loss dropped them to 0-5. I'm never rooting for a guy to get fired. I hate to see guys get fired, but in this case, that had to be done. That's a team that's going backwards. That's a team that got hammered by a rebuilding Panthers team. That's a team where there's no sign of anything turning around on its own anytime soon. And you got to think that Falcons owner Arthur Blank looked at his head coach Dan Quinn and then looked across at the other side of the field and saw Carolina's young head coach Matt Rhule and saw how Rhule stepped right in during a pandemic, no less, and gave them a shot of adrenaline in the midst of a pandemic and sees how they just beat his team. You know that Blank had to look at that, had to look at Rhule and think to himself, man, I got to get me one of those. And just as he probably thought to himself, Quinn is not a good enough coach, you know he probably thought to himself, man, damn, now I get it. Kyle Shanahan is the biggest reason we went to that Super Bowl, not Quinn. And speaking of the Super Bowl, speaking of Shanahan, yesterday was a rough day for last year's Super Bowl teams, Kansas City and San Francisco. KC had the Las Vegas Raiders coming into their house. Or come into their house, I should say, and get bullied by those Raiders. The Raiders had lost 7 straight in KC, but that ended yesterday when Derek Carr lit up that Kansas City secondary for nearly 350 yards and 3 touchdowns, including this one to Nelson Aguilar.
So Carr from the gun fires deep down the right side, caught by Aguilar at the 20, 10, 5, into the end zone. Nelson Aguilar with a beautiful catch and run. That's a way to do it.
Raiders Radio. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. I'll take some of that music, Alvy. Wait a minute. I thought Derek Carr could not go vertical. I thought he could not push the ball downfield. I thought that vertical game that Alvin Davis loved so much was missing with this guy. Yeah, I don't know. Because that was nice. And so was this.
Chiefs rush 5. Carr's going for the home run ball. Got a man open. It's Ruggs. There he is. Ruggs. Touchdown. Jackpot, baby. Jackpot. Vegas leads it. Can't keep up with Mr. Ruggs when he gets deep. And John Gruden, that's a way to call a play. Go for it. Try to keep up with Ruggs. I'd love to see Ruggs and Tyreek Hill in a foot race. We'd beat you, Tyreek. You can't catch this guy. He's too fast. 72-yard touchdown.
Speed still kills. And they're back to being vertical. And don't let that final score fool you either. That was not a one-score game. Late in the fourth quarter, the Raiders were up 40-24 on the champs. Derek Carr was outplaying Patrick Mahomes. Strange as that sounds. And you know, Raider Mike was losing his dome and blowing up the Raider message boards and trying to get Mike Mayock on the phone to find out what the hell was going on. No, check that. To let Mike Mayock know what the hell was going on. And if that was surprising, then what do you make? What do you think of what Miami did? That was stunning. The Dolphins come out to the West Coast, and they absolutely cold cock the Niners. 43-17. Can I repeat that for you? Miami 43, San Francisco 17. The Dolphins were up 30-7 at halftime. It was so bad that Jimmy Garoppolo was taken out of the game in the second half. And Ryan Fitzpatrick was doing what Rhino does, just playing sandlot ball with his boys, running around, pulling plays out of his ass, having a good old time to the tune of 350 yards and 3 TDs. You know, the thing that he's done on about 100 other Sundays for about 100 other teams. Did you know he went to Harvard? Difference is, he had a defense to back him up yesterday. One that forced 3 turnovers. One that had 5 sacks. one that held the Niners to under 260 yards for the game. What an amazing performance from Miami. What a disaster for the 49ers. And no, let's not freak out. Let's not freak out and say that Jimmy G is about to lose his job, if he hasn't already, to C.J. Beathard. At least not yet. At least not today. Garoppolo was dinged the last couple of weeks. The entire team has been ravaged by injuries. And yes, they did get worked by the Dolphins, who had to come across the country in order to deliver that ass-kicking. Except the Niners. They've got a huge game coming up against the Rams this week. A huge game, a huge opportunity, and a huge chance to change the conversation. So no, I would not be looking to smash that panic button yet with these guys. But best to know where it is, just in case. Also, that said, if there is a panic button to hit, the Eagles should have been slamming it yesterday. Every time the ball went to Steelers rookie Chase Claypool, he had himself a day. The Eagles had themselves a nightmare. There was this TD run in the first quarter.
Jet sweep to the left. And that is Claypool busting across the goal line for the touchdown right to left. There's the Matt Canada influence.
Oh, great googly moogly. That is pure Canadian bacon, Chalooch.
Yeah, the Canadian bacon.
He sizzles.
Anyway, then he got loose in the second quarter as well.
Gets the snap. Over the middle, there's Chase Claypool. Steps out of a tackle. 10-5. Touchdown for the rookie from Notre Dame.
Big dude doing damage, making plays. Then in the third quarter,
four people bunch flexed left. He's back. Chase gets the ball. Goes for the goal line. Touchdown, Chase Claypool. And that was a beauty.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe you figure out where this guy is on the field. Maybe you pay a little more attention to this guy. Or maybe he does this again.
Here's the snap. He throws it down the field. Oh, that is Chase Claypool into the end zone for a Pittsburgh Steelers touchdown. Wide open from 35 out. And Ben kind of knew it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been saying it all day. This is our fourth time saying it, but that's top shelf Canadian bacon and sizzling.
He was looking at Chase Claypool the whole time. Ben ran it out there.
That is just excellent. You talk about Mapletron, four times Mapletron.
Four touchdowns.
That's amazing.
Steelers radio. I have to agree, man. That's none of that microwavable bacon bullcrap. I guess. Anyway, I have no idea what they're talking about. I know this, though. I know this. And maybe I know nothing at all, but I know this. I know just enough to know maybe you put a freaking body on number 11. That's what I know. But Philly couldn't stop this guy in the game, and then nobody could stop him online after the game. He chased that amazing game with a couple of amazing Twitter posts. One was a pic of him with Roethlisberger, which read, 7-Eleven, always open. And then he chased that. He chased that one with his head photoshopped onto Tom Brady's body with Brady holding up four fingers from Thursday night. Well played, big dude. Really well played. Hey, listen, are you craving some protein after a good workout? Don't make a shake or eat a bar. Instead, grab a bag of beef jerky from Old Trapper. Why? Why Old Trapper? Because Old Trapper beef jerky is tasty, it's tender. It's made with real strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a wood fire. And Old Trapper is a family-owned business that takes smoked beef very seriously. You can taste it in every single bite. Like, who wants dried out, tough beef in a bag? Nobody. It's like eating a shoe. Old Trapper, though, is the real deal. It comes in four amazing flavors. Old Fashioned, which is sweetened with a touch of brown sugar goodness, teriyaki, peppered, and hot and spicy for those of you who want to shake things up. Next time you want to grab a great protein and energy snack that you can have anytime, anywhere, grab some Old Trapper beef jerky. Be sure to look for Old Trapper. It's in the Clearview bag. That way you can see the quality you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, clones, ask for it by name, because no other beef jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? With Chris Mannix. My man is really busy and he's back. Chris, what's going on? How are you?
What's going on, Jim?
How you doing, man?
Glad that the 50-week season has finally wound down.
My man, I would imagine you are, and this always goes back to the conversation you and I had way back in the day when you would appear on my TV show daily, and you would talk about, man, you know what's important to me? Balance, quality of life, and yet you are grinding harder than anybody right now. All right, so Chris, go back to Friday night. What did you make of the game overall, and in particular, what Jimmy Butler and the Heat did when it would have been so much easier to fold and just go home?
Yeah, and having been in the bubble as long as I was, I had seen teams in similar positions, you know, kind of bail out in a way, or at least not, you know, get going when it got tough. Because, you know, there's it's a daunting task to be down 3-1, especially to a team like the Lakers. So as impressive as it was to see the Heat come out strong the way they did, it was more impressive to watch them come back after giving up a double-digit lead in the fourth quarter. I mean, that was kind of the moment you would have expected Miami to crumble, with LeBron, you know, sort of playing the role of Tiger Woods on a Sunday, just ready to close them out. But they rallied from that, and, you know, Jimmy Butler went punch for punch with LeBron and finished it off. But even after that, Jim, you know, you could tell that the Heat left everything on the floor. I mean, whether it was from how they played, the amount of minutes that they played, or even watching a guy like Butler after the game kind of walk very slowly off the podium, step gingerly. I mean, he had gone through so much in the last couple of weeks physically to get through to this point. You just had a feeling that that was their championship, that not folding when people expect them to do was their big opportunity.
Chris Mannix joining us. I agree with you, which is why last night I think that when the Lakers came in locked in the way they were, there was nothing Miami was going to be able to do to hold off that onslaught, especially since they had left it all out there the game before. You know, Chris, when you look at the Lakers, though, it's really easy to look at them right now and say, of course they were going to win a title. But if you go back to the start of last season, and more than a year ago, when there was that suggestion that Frank Vogel might be replaced very quickly, that LeBron was coming off the worst injury of his career, that Anthony Davis was unproven in high-pressure playoff situations, they had all those new faces they had to incorporate. Like, how sure of a thing was it back then that the Lakers were going to win it all?
Oh, I don't think it was a sure thing at all. And, you know, there are countless Lakers fans right now claiming to have known it was, but show me the receipts. Like, I don't believe you, Laker Nation. I don't believe that in, you know, the spring you were all in on Frank Vogel after Vogel spent 2 years in Orlando and got fired. I don't believe that you were this, you know, big believer in Dwight Howard's ability to make an impact or Rajon Rondo's ability to make an impact. I don't even believe, frankly, that you were 100% sure about LeBron James. I mean, he was 35 years old, or in his 35th year season, coming off a year where he played 55 games, the fewest of his career, had the most significant injury of his career. So you had every reason to be optimistic that they'd be better with Anthony Davis, a legitimate top five player. But please, like, I don't want to hear it from Laker fans that this was inevitable, that the skeptics out there were just Laker haters or LeBron haters. I mean, give me a break. This team was, at one point, Jim, in July, they had three players on the roster. Like, remember, they waited out Kawhi Leonard and then had to deal with NBA leftovers. I mean, Rondo played great in these playoffs, but where were these Laker fans back in February when, you know, the Darren Collison was being courted like the girl you couldn't get in high school? Like, it was just, it's crazy to think that this was all, you know, preordained back in September, October, when that couldn't be any further from the truth.
So right. So right. Chris Mannix joining us. All right, so Chris, when you talk about LeBron, we see, I mean, to your point, entering this season at age 35, 17th year overall, coming off the most significant injury of his career. There's what he accomplished as a player this year, which is astonishing. But what's the title say about LeBron as a leader and his evolution in that regard?
I mean, it says enormous things. It makes a strong statement about his leadership. And look, we knew he was a strong leader coming into all this. He took on a Cavaliers team that had an unproven talent in Kyrie Irving, a guy that's won nothing in the playoffs in Kevin Love, a bunch of other pieces that have been on some bad Cavaliers team and elevated them into a championship. So his leadership in general was beyond reproach. But everything the Lakers went through from the day Kobe Bryant passed away in that crash to the end of the season, from the stoppage to the social justice issues to the stoppage again mid-bubble. Like, LeBron took a leadership role within that team the entire time, and players looked to him for an example. He said it. So, you know, I thought coming into all this, he was a proven leader, but I think he did elevate himself in that regard over the last, let's say, 10 months of this turbulent Lakers season.
We're talking to Chris Mannix for a few more moments. So, Chris, like, ranking NBA titles can be like a really strange exercise, but if you were to rank LeBron's four championships, where does this one rank?
Oh, it's number two, right behind the Cleveland championship. I mean, nothing will ever surpass what happened in Cleveland to win a title in a city that, you know, it was half a century since they last won a title, to do it in the way that they did it, coming back from 3-1 down against, you know, statistically the best team in NBA history. That, I mean, nothing will ever touch that. But this is far more significant than what he did in Miami, winning a championship against Oklahoma City in 2012, winning against the Spurs in 2013. I mean, this is the second most significant accomplishment of his career. And if not for the overall significance of what happened in Cleveland, this would be a pretty clear number one. In fact, I think the only thing it really competes with, Jim, is game six in the conference finals against Boston in 2012. You remember that? Like, the year before, they lost in the finals. They were down 3-2 to Boston in that conference finals. And if they had lost that game six, oh, man, it could have been bad for LeBron in Miami. The he can't win anything brigade would have been out in full force. But LeBron went out there, and I was at that game. He had just one of the most incredible playoff performances of his career, of anybody's career, and put that team on his back to win in the Garden and force a game seven that they eventually won. So I think the three most significant team accomplishments of LeBron's career are the Cleveland title, this title, and that's a close third is what happened in that game against Boston.
Chris Mannix joining us. All right, Chris, so what about Miami? Quickly, where do the Heat go from here?
Well, you run the whole thing back if you can. You try to get Goran Dragic on a short-term deal. You've got Robinson. You've got Hero. You've got Adebayo. You got Butler. All these guys signed to long-term deals. But you don't go out there and sign anybody that would be beyond next season, because you have your eye on the biggest prize in free agency in 2021. That's Giannis. And if you're Miami, you have submitted the best audition you can possibly have for Giannis. You beat him in the playoffs in 5 games, and then you went on and gave LeBron the toughest test you could have in the finals. You can't make any stronger case to Giannis that, look, you come down to our team, embrace our system, live on South Beach, we can win a championship with you. So you run the whole thing back if you can next year, and then you go out there and try to bring in that next superstar in 2021.
All right, so last thought, Chris. I would imagine it would be nice for you to have a breath or two, kind of relax. I hate to hit you with this, but what is your sense as to when the new season will start? What is the plan going forward? The NBA did such an amazing job within the bubble, and I think other leagues can follow suit, but when do they run this thing back and start up again?
Well, it's an incredibly fluid situation, Jim. It really is, because everything is predicated on the league's ability to get back into arenas. If the league sees a pathway to get into arenas, either through a vaccine or some form of rapid testing that's readily available, they'll push the season back to February, even March. If it doesn't look like that's going to be feasible, I could see the league going into regional bubbles, not one big bubble, but regional bubbles as early as January. I don't think anything starts before January. You might get training camp opening up maybe just after Christmas or early January. But everything is going to be dependent on what the landscape looks like in terms of arenas. We know, Jim, 40% of that league revenue comes from fans and the gate revenue they provide. The NBA is not going to just ignore that. They're going to find any way possible to get as many games in as they can in their arenas, and they're probably going to be willing to wait as long as they have to do it.
Given the nature of what happened and who it happened to, I would argue that it was one of the worst moments of any NFL season. I'm talking about Dak Prescott and what happened to him. And no, I am not going to play the video of what happened to him. If you have not seen the video, you should keep it that way. Consider yourself fortunate, because it's right up there with some of the worst injuries in sports. You know, like Alex Smith bad, Kevin Ware bad, Joe Theismann bad. And believe me, seeing it once was enough. Actually, seeing it once was too much. I will play the audio, however, of the call.
And here's a quarterback draw up the middle. Prescott bouncing out to the left across the 20. He's inside the Sherwin-Williams red zone. 19
Boy, and he's hurt. Dak Prescott's hurt. I didn't like the way he fell. When you run your quarterback, you're always taking a chance. He's holding his right leg. He couldn't brace himself. He had the ball, and the right shoulder came down, but it's the right knee, or right leg, I should say, that he's holding.
Yeah, that's going to get McCarthy off the sideline.
Well, and they immediately, the official there in front of him, immediately waved for medical personnel to come over and attend to Dak. Just looking at it, I'll be shocked if it's not a broken ankle. You just saw his foot get caught up underneath him. That foot was just pointed in a direction it should not be.
And Andy Dalton, come on down. This is your worst nightmare.
Cowboys radio. I mean, honestly, just hearing the radio call is too much because I know what it looked like. It was disgusting. It was extremely difficult to look at. Initially, it looked like Dak's shoe was hanging off, like maybe his shoe had simply slipped off in the tackle, but that's not what happened. And then there was the way he was holding his leg and massaging his calf, like maybe he had cramped up, but that's not what happened either. What actually did happen is a compound fracture and a dislocation of his right ankle. In other words, the shoe was not hanging off his foot. His foot was hanging off his body. The worst part of the whole thing might have been the image of Dak, most likely in shock, if I had to guess, trying to feel his calf and figure out what the hell happened to his leg. And then there's that image of him being on the cart and in tears as one cowboy after another came over to show their love and pay their respects. And then the respect and the love coming from the Giants sideline too. Like, saying something sucks is not a take, we know this, but I'm going to be saying the word sucks a lot right now because that injury sucks. It truly sucks. Like, I don't care if you're a Cowboys fan or not, a Dak fan or not, the injury sucks. He was playing some great football, and to see this particular guy go down like that sucks. Seeing any player go down like that is awful. But you can also see the love his teammates have for him, how they responded to him. And then with how everybody around the league jumped on Twitter. Guys that he goes up against, guys he competes with fiercely. Carson Wentz, quote, worst part of the game. Definitely praying for Dak. Melvin Gordon, quote, dang Dak. I'm hurt for you, man. Goodness, dog. Troy Aikman, quote, devastated for Dak. One of the truly great people in the NFL. Chris Long, quote, damn it. Dak is a great dude. I hate this for anyone, but he's been through a lot. And the fact is, he has been through a lot. An absolute bleep ton. Just in the past year alone. And before that as well. And now to have to endure this sucks. And now he's looking at a long rehab process. Not an impossible rehab process. And most likely not as bad as Alex Smith's, because Smith had to deal with a life-threatening infection and 17 surgeries. But this is not going to be easy. He already underwent surgery. He underwent surgery last night, which seemed really fast, didn't it? But now the reality sinks in and the hard work begins. Like, I'm no doctor. I don't know what to predict in terms of when he might come back, what he'll look like when he does come back, if he comes back. But my sense of Dak is that nobody's going to hit the rehab process any harder than he will. If it's possible to come back at the same level or maybe even better, then Dak Prescott will do it. This is the kind of person he is, the kind of leader he is, the guy who's never missed a game, never missed a game, and still has not gotten nearly the respect that he deserves. Maybe some of you will appreciate him when you don't have him. Maybe Jerry Jones will appreciate him when he doesn't have him. Because you should. Because Jones should. And I'll tell you what else sucks. The franchise tag sucks. The fact that the Cowboys hadn't already taken care of this guy with the contract that he earned sucks. As Dez Bryant tweeted, quote, Stephen Jones, Jerry Jones, y'all make sure y'all take care of Dak if he can't play again, end quote. That's the truth. You better take care of this guy if he can't play again, Stephen, Jera. And you better take care of this guy if he can play again, Stephen, Jera. You jerked him around for too long with that contract, and now this is a situation where everything sucks. And I say that because I'm reiterating also what I've already said and what Darius Butler said. They've taken care of other key guys on that team, but not the quarterback. Other quarterbacks in that same class have been taken care of, but not this quarterback. And now a moment or two for some of the worst takes regarding that injury. You know, the one about his contract and about the future. If your reaction to the injury was that Dak is the one to blame, that Dak should have taken care of the contract, that Dak should have taken the contract, the below market value contract, but that Dak should have taken the contract that they offered him before the season, then you should take a look in the mirror. If your reaction to seeing this guy with his foot on backwards is to immediately make it about the money and to second guess how he handled his contract situation, I mean, come on, man. Get a life. If your reaction coming out of the injury is that now the Cowboys can really see what Andy Dalton can do, I mean, keep moving. Of all the things that suck, that take might suck worst of all. Like, I'm a big Tony Dungy fan. I couldn't respect Tony Dungy more. But that take last night about how this is a blessing in disguise was a truly horrible take from a really good guy. I mean, I have no idea where he was going with that. A blessing in disguise? What, your franchise quarterback putting his foot on backwards is a blessing in disguise? Extremely poor choice of words. And Dungy himself knows that. I don't know what he was thinking when he said that. There may even be a scenario where the Cowboys find, a different offensive identity with Dalton. Maybe they somehow get their act together defensively now. Maybe they play some decent football now. Maybe their season is not over because of the division they play in. But let's be really clear about this. Perfectly clear about this. Crystal clear about this. There's no silver lining in this. There is no silver lining or positive in this. There's no silver at all in this. It just sucks. It flat out sucks. Period. A silver lining. Or a blessing in disguise, or an opportunity. Man, come on. It sucks. Line number 6, Jeff in SoCal. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Rome, hey, first of all, I got to give a shout-out to your boy Rick Ackerman for that stop at train crossings PSA he read before that last sports update. Lives have been saved, Rick. And, Jim, the Lakers winning the championship, woo! I can't be the only one who's happy that that train wreck season is over. I'm ready for that bubble to get bulldozed and turn into a parking lot. The Lakers get a Larry O trophy, but personally, I think they really should have received a blue ribbon and a coupon for a free one-topping pizza from Roundtable. And as predicted, as soon as that clock hit zero, a bunch of dead-ass fools ran down to Staples Center to stand around and look at other dead-ass fools blowing things up. The local news brought out the helicopter that they usually reserve for high-speed chases to cover these idiots in the street. I think my favorite part, though, Jim, is these clowns who wear the full Lakers uniform out of the house to celebrate as if Frank Vogel may actually call on them to get some much-needed minutes. Multiple grown men in Lakers jerseys, Lakers shorts, and basketball shoes. Jim, this notion that you aren't a real fan unless you're in a full game uniform is absurd. Grown men in a full Lakers uniform. If you wear a full Lakers uniform, you're a turd and a loser, and you need a damn drug check. On more, people who talk about their fantasy team in public, I'm out.
Jeff in SoCal, cracking on his own.
Good night, now.